Liquid Books, Budapest's weekly English language cultural magazine.
Hello, thank you. I'm very happy to be here once again.
We're very pleased to have you back. I understand that you are a novelist.
Yes, I write not just novels, but the latest book which was published was a novel, and the title was Twilight, and that is means Between Darkness and Light, and this is symbolic of the world situation. It means we are going to go from darkness to the light. But at the same time, I would like to clarify, it doesn't necessarily mean that immediate future there is a light, but still maybe darkness. But beyond that, a great light is coming. So that's the latest book I wrote.
Twilight was published in Australia.
Yes, Twilight was published in Australia, and we hope to be translated in several languages. Because this book is for the young generation all over the world. It means that how to build their future world, a new world. Because the future world actually belongs to young generation, and they should be concerned about the future world, not just pessimist or just indifferent and just bystander. I wrote this book because young generation, generally speaking, they are very hopeless and helpless. They feel that they have come to nothing. They're just a victim of the systems that they have not built up. And so I wanted to say that now the young generation can build a new world, and it is quite possible. How to build a new world is to have a vision and to have a hope for that vision, and also courage to it. But one thing that I have noticed that, for example, young generation, if they are not satisfied with any system or any way of thinking or anything, they just resort to violence. That's not the way of building a new world, because they have no vision actually for the future world. They are not satisfied with existing thing, but they don't know what will be the future.
Tell our listeners, if you will, please, a little bit about the story of Twilight.
You know, actually, one part is facts in fiction, and it is very real about today's world. You know, some believe that literature should be related to the social issues, some think that completely be separated. But this book in that line, connecting and relating to the social issues of today and the world situation. There are seven characters in this novel, and they have quite different worldview. Because they have different worldview, there will be a lot of dialogues. Everyone expresses his or her view, and then the readers can judge for themselves which view actually can create a new world.
Tell us about the characters.
One person is a very, very religious Catholic, for example, and one is a mystic, a mystic way of thinking, and one is very liberal, and one is just indifferent and no way of thinking, not. And also there are one character, Baha'i, one is the man and one is the girl. These two characters are Baha'is. And also there is a sense of romance as well. It's very entertaining. And these two persons get married at the end. And also it's very exciting because it is very changing setting it has. It's in seven countries. So it is very entertaining and can keep the reader read to the end. This give a new vision at the same time, quite related to the problems that we have today, because many people, there is no breakthrough for them. They think that we are condemned to this situation. There is no way. But this will give them a vision and hope and courage for the new world.
That's wonderful. Let's take a short break.
All you're missing.
Iraq, talking with Mr. Jamshid Fanayan. I understand that you are also a translator. You are fluent in several languages, and you have worked not just as a writer, but translated several works. Can you tell us about your work as a translator?
Yes, actually, I have a Persian background, so it's the language that I know. So I have translated some books from English into Persian, for example, The Goal of a New World Order and The Unfoldment of World Civilization, and also Security for a Failing World, and so on. So I have translated this type. As you can see, all in the line of the New World.
So you translated these works, excuse me, into Persian?
Yeah, into Persian, from English into Persian. But the other work that I have translated and is going to be edited and published, was has not been published, from Persian into English. This is one of the book of my grandfather, that who was a great mystic of the time. The title is The Repository of Mysteries. So this book I have translated, and hopefully very soon to be published in English language. And we hope that will be a door, a way to be translated to other languages, because to translate from English in other languages is easier and more resources available for to do that. This book actually is a spiritual development, or treading the mystic path stage by stage and level by level until to get near to God, see God, His face.
This was written by your grandfather in Persian. When did he write?
Actually, he mentioned the date in his book when it was written. The date he uses is the new calendar, because as a Baha'i, I want to say that Baha'i faith has brought a new calendar, introduced a new calendar to the world. It means the year is divided into 19 months, and a month is 19 days. He mentioned the new calendar date. So I must find out all to transfer it to how. It was about, I think, 70 years ago.
And this is a work of fiction? No, it's...
No, it is spiritual things, and it's seven valleys, actually. It means that the seeker or the wayfarer pass through seven valleys, how to pass through, and the experience, the ecstasy, the upliftment and turmoil and everything, how to pass through and to get close to God and to a new vision of God, a vision of the world, vision of the higher realms. So it is very deep book. I remember that there was a person, Dr. Dawoodi. He was teaching philosophy, mysticism, and the Rumi's work at the university. He told me that certain parts of his book is beyond our grasp of our understanding, because he soared in a realm above that we cannot cope with him. He also talked about the next world. He says that, how is the next world? Because he have a glimpse of that world. And very clear in his writing that he could achieve such a thing.
What kind of a picture does he give of the next world?
He says that you cannot see next world with this eye, because the eye that we have is material, flesh. So this flesh can see only material world, because the next world is a spiritual realms. You should have obtained an inner or a spiritual eye, then you can see it. These ears is material, so can hear only these material sounds and music. So you must obtain that inner ear to be able to hear the divine and celestial melodies. This world compared to the next world is like leaf compared to a garden. And the next world is a world of light, bliss, and joy. And you soar in an unlimitless space.
How does your grandfather achieve this in the book?
As I see the book, is Seven Valleys. He was a Baha'i at the same time, I would like to say. And there is a book, small book by Baha'u'llah himself, the prophet founder of Baha'i faith, about Seven Valleys, this title. he actually wanted to expand and also expound what Baha'u'llah was saying. But later on he changed, he made it completely independent work. It means what was his experience as a wayfarer through the realm after realm. Because this is a bounty that the people do not try to have that celestial experience. That is not quite possible for us. And he invites the reader to tread this path with him, step by step and stage by stage, and to see that glory, to see that beauty, to see that bliss and joy. So this is to make him a spiritual person. And so he did, he achieved it. And one thing which is very strange about him, that he did not enter school and did not have a private teacher. He has only learned the basic how to read the alphabet like that. And still, as I said, Dr. Dawoodi and many people said that no, it's not easy to understand some of the explanations that he gave about the higher realms. Is so high level he has soared into. So this is also very strange, because normally we have to go to school and to learn, and after all our learning changes, and also the philosopher, each one reject the other one and edit the other one, that's the whole works we have. But a person has not entered school, so this is quite possible. So that is connection to the innate knowledge, because we have acquired knowledge which is very limited and also unreliable sometimes. You cannot be absolutely sure that this is true, because maybe next day another person, no, this is not true, this is the another theory come up. But this innate knowledge means there exists innate knowledge, and if person can be connected to that innate knowledge, suddenly he get access to an ocean of knowledge. And this is possible. But the people never try to develop spiritually to be able to get access to that innate knowledge.
Let's take a short break, and when we come back, I will ask you a little bit, what are the steps on this mystic path, and how does it relate to the Baha'i worldview?
Every man for himself. character is going to fall off of? And what about stairs? Yodelay.
From the Baha'i point of view, since Baha'u'llah himself wrote that booklet in answer to a mystic, actually, Seven Valleys, it means he included mysticism in the Baha'i faith. It means that it is possible and it is recommended that people tread the mystic path, which is more or less a spiritual development, which is overlapping each other in many, many areas. From the Baha'i point of view, to tread mystic path is accepted, but in a way that Baha'u'llah wrote that book to protect the seeker against any superstitions. Because many times it happens when we go to spiritual realms, some people just go away, go astray, and very strange ideas they bring into in the name of the spirituality, and that is the people don't like it. But what is, when we talk, it's very logic, very clear that this is a spiritual development, and also there is a possibility to approach God, to get near to God, and also to have a vision of God. There is a possibility, but there should be with reason, something adaptable to science, and that is the Baha'i faith, helping the seekers how to tread the path. And Baha'u'llah actually took a light in front of the seekers to find his way.
Can you speak a little bit about what are the steps of this mystic path?
The first step is yearning. It means if we have, must have a passionate yearning, want to approach God. We have passionate yearning, we want to see the face of God. We have a passionate yearning to be close to God. At the same time, we have to bear in mind that we want to approach God. God also wants to approach us, come to us, and also reside in us and illumine our inner soul. But there is a condition. Baha'u'llah himself said that thy soul is my home. purified it for my descent. So it means that God does not enter in the home of the soul if it is not clean. So cleanliness, transformation, is the prerequisite for God can enter into our soul and reside there and illumine our inner being and make us a new creature, actually. So to be created as a new person. So this is what Baha'u'llah wanted, that the people tread this path, but not to be get lost in the labyrinths of superstitions and imagination and got away from logic and like that. Because it is mystery. When we say mystery, is beyond something, but doesn't mean it is unreasonable.
Is the mystic path concerned with the individual, or is it concerned with society and the world? And what's the relation between those?
Actually, to tread the mystic path or to have a spiritual development is something individual. But at the same time, individual parts of the society. So it means that in the Baha'i writing, it says that the people should be spiritualized to have unity in the world. Without the spiritualization of entire humankind, it is not possible we have the unity of the world. So though it is individual, but at the same time is related to society and creating a new society. Baha'u'llah, when he revealed this book, it means that everybody should tread this path. Everybody, no exception. It means everybody should have that spiritual development and prepare himself, and the society will be prepared for a great change, and that change is the new world, and the new world is unity of the world. On the other hand, if we carry with us in all the dirtiness we have, the fanaticism, hatred, aggressions, and cruelty, and darkness, how we can have unity of the world? So this is necessary, that we should be purified from all these prejudices, purified of all this fanaticism, purified from this narrow-mindedness, and actually to have a broader view of the future world, so we can then that can help us to bring about a new world with world unity and world peace. Because sometimes when we talk to the people at the world unity, world peace, they say, oh, that's a good idea, but not practical. Why they said that? Because they look at themselves. They are not prepared for that. Because they are right what they say, because they look around themselves, they see the people have full of prejudices, fanaticism, dirtiness, and greed, and so on. So they think that how this group of people can really bring about the unity of the world. But this spiritualization is needed. So there are two things, individual and society system. If the individual, it will be very good, spiritual and system is wrong, system is corrupt, the system can corrupt the individual. Or the opposite is true. If the system is good, and the individual are corrupt, the individual corrupt the system. So this from the Baha'i point of view, this is side by side. It means the personal, individual training at the same time to have a new system that Baha'u'llah has suggested and proposed to the world to have a world federation and something new.
Does Baha'u'llah offer concrete suggestions for how to realize such a system of unity?
Yes. What Baha'u'llah said is not just expressing a wish or a hope for the future, or he just reject the past and just protest it now. He actually presented a pattern for new society. Actually, he brought all the teachings can help us for the unification of mankind and establishment of universal peace. Because universal peace we are talking about is not just a good idea. We say, okay, let us have peace, and then we have peace. No. Peace is the outcome of the solutions of many problems that we have. If these problems are not solved, there will be no peace. Even they come to agreement, and the following day again will be collapsed. This happened because the root problem is there. So peace is outcome of solutions to many problems. One of the Baha'i writings which addressed to the durable peace in Hague, you know, there was a group of people came to establish peace, and they asked one of the Baha'i figure of the leader of the Baha'i faith, not the Prophet himself, and they asked him what to do to establish a peace. He praised their intentions, very good intention, but he said you cannot establish peace because peace is outcome of solution of many problems. There are economic problems, political problems, and the system may be corrupt, and also the individual emotion is sometimes is very negative and should be positive, and this needs requires a lot of training, and we must go to the root cause of problems, and then we have peace.
Friar Hermit stumbles over the cloudy borderline. Frozen warnings close to mine, close to the frozen borderline. Frozen warnings close to mine, close to the frozen borderline. Into numberless reflections rises a smile from your eyes into mine. Frozen warnings close to mine, close to the frozen borderline. Station treads, faintly flickers a modest cry. From without a thousand cycles, a thousand cycles to come, a thousand times to win, a thousand ways to run the world. In a similar reply, Friar Hermit stumbles the cloudy borderline. Frozen warnings close to mine, close to the frozen borderline. Frozen warnings close to mine, close to the frozen borderline. Thank you.
Baha'u'llah proposed to the world a new structure how the world to be governed. I don't mean world government at all. It means how the nations could be united together as a part of the world unity. So he suggested that every country can have their autonomy, their parliament, their elections, their system maybe, their customs, but still they have no right to have army. They shouldn't have army and they shouldn't have any right to make weapons. But I must add, when we say, he said, no army, doesn't mean we are going to belittle the army service because something's needed a particular time. This, we are talking about the future world. He said that there will be no training for army to be. So this was, and also he said only the country should have a police force to have order, for the order of the country. And also one international police force that keep the order in the world. And he said that if there is any disputes between the nations, they should be referred to a world court. And world court will discuss the matter and to pass the judgment and to implement that judgment. And also they should have a power. It means the nation could have to accept it. It's not something, today, for example, United Nations we have, sometimes they haven't that power to implement. Also, it's not that level that Baha'u'llah said. Baha'u'llah said there should be an assemblage. All the kings and the rulers of the world come together and they deliberate on the issue of the peace. But we have League of Nations that Woodrow Wilson, he brought these 14 articles as the basis of the League of Nations. And he was well acquainted with the Baha'i teachings because one of his daughter was a Baha'i, and he was reading the Baha'i writings, and what he suggested, actually, it seemed that he was inspired by the Baha'i teachings. But that also was dissolved because many problems occurred, and America himself withdrew from that membership, very strange. And then it was dissolved, the United Nations came to power, was formed. And the founder of the United Nations, both of them were well familiar with the Baha'i teachings. But this is just steps towards that goal, the assemblage that Baha'u'llah talked about. It's not still in that stage for two reasons. First, this United Nations is at the stage of delegation. It means every nation sends some delegates. It's not that stage that Baha'u'llah said the kings, emperors and the rulers and president themselves must come together, have assemblage to talk about the whole issue. This number one is not that way. Secondly, these delegates come only to defend the rights of their own country, and even may not be right. So they must prefer the welfare of the world over the benefit of their own particular country. The same way that, for example, in a country, the delegates come from different regions. They must consider the welfare of the country over of a particular region they come from. The same way must happen. So that is an assemblage of the world. But at the same time, we can appreciate that at least some steps has been taken towards that goal. We have the League of Nations, United Nations. Maybe United Nations be dissolved, but it will be replaced with a stronger organizations with much more power and less defects as it has now. But this is steps towards that goal. It's a light, small, maybe weak, but it's light in darkness.
It seems that one of the great stumbling blocks to such a harmonious future world, as you describe, is the inability of nations to get past their distrust of each other. From what I hear you saying, it does not seem possible that unless all of the nations are like-minded that such a world can come about, because the possibility for abuse of power is great if you are centralizing world power and control and a world system and you don't first have enlightenment, then it's subject to tremendous abuse. And I think probably many people instinctively fear that kind of development, and this is keeping them artificially apart. Are there any teachings within the Baha'i Faith any help to navigate such a difficulty?
You know, actually, when over 130 years ago, when Baha'u'llah appeared on this planet, he wrote to the kings and the rulers and the emperors and religious leaders of all faiths, and he delivered a message to them that he said, the time has come for a new era. We are entering a new era of spiritual and social development. He wrote to the Napoleon III, the Emperor of France. He wrote to the Alexander II, the Tsar of Russia. He sent them a tablet. He used the word tablet. He sent a tablet to the Victoria, the Queen of the British Empire. Also, he sent a tablet to Abdul Aziz, the Emperor of Ottoman Empire, and also the Caliph of Islamic world. He also sent a tablet to Pius X, the head of a Catholic Church. And also in one book, he addressed all the kings and the emperors and presidents of the world collectively, and philosophers of the world, mystics of the world, learned people, religious leaders, parliament members, and he asked them to accept the new message and to change the world. But unfortunately, the world was too far away from the ideals and the teaching that he was presenting. And mostly they couldn't understand the significance of his message, what he was saying, telling them. But then when there was no response, he said that world will fall into turmoil. He said there will be war, there will be revolution, there will be conflict, there will be collapse of many systems. He said that there will be agony, there will be sufferings. And then he said that mankind passed through these sufferings, and but these sufferings also has one positive impact or effect, and that is to awaken humankind to his situation, to awaken them to do something for the world, to awaken them that old notions is not suitable for this time. He awakened them, this is the time of universal peace. Universal peace is not a good idea. This is no other choice. We have no other choice. We have to have universal peace. The leaders of the world have to come together to contract. But unfortunately, they need a little more sufferings. And we can see, also Baha'u'llah says that the First World War, Second World War was predicted in the Baha'i writings. And also they say there will be a world convulsions. We can see that now. He said that there will be many things happening. So, but there was a promise as well, not just something. He said that after that, the people realize what is for good for them, and they determine to establish world peace. They determine to bring unity. They understand there must be unity among religions. They understand that all these ethnic and prejudice can damage and destroy many things. Then they come to something positive, something reality, something good for everyone on this planet to build a new world. So they will be determined to build a new world. And also, he said that the leaders, in the Baha'i writing, says that leaders of the world, ultimately they sign a very solid contract of world peace, but there will not be a spiritual or moral motive for this. It means the leaders of the world will be forced, actually, to accept the world peace because the destructive powers at the disposal of humankind is so dangerous and so destructive that they cannot leave it like this. They have to establish world peace to be able.
Would you say then that the teachings of Baha'u'llah are a new kind of political philosophy for the world?
No, because politics is a very negative impression sometimes it has. And this is a new system of governing the world, a new system how to bring about the peace and unity of the world. Even in the Baha'i writing said that the Baha'i should not be to be involved in politics for this reason, that sometimes politics mislead you to something for the benefit of a special group. And also Baha'u'llah says that there are two stages of world peace. The first stage is that the world leader, as I said, will be forced to sign the contract of peace. And the reason is that they feel that the destructive powers at disposal of humankind is so dangerous. There is no other way for them until unless to sign a contract and not to be used. These dangerous things, destructive power should not be used.
So that first stage is a lesser peace. It's a man-made peace.
Yes, this is a political peace, man-made peace, something that Baha'is will not be directly involved in that, but indirectly, actually, this is also something that in the Baha'i writing said that they call it lesser peace. It means that the leaders of the world make that peace. Because actually he suggested in the tablet that he sent to the Victoria, the queen of the British Empire, he said that the leaders of the world have not accepted the divine message that I brought to them. If they could accept it, the world peace will be established automatically. But since they have not accepted, at least you call all the presidents and the kings of the world to come together and deliberate on the peace issue and reduce the armaments. He said this reduction of the armaments, the first time Baha'u'llah mentioned it. So then he said that at least do not take money from the people to kill each other. But she did not respond, and he asked her to do that. But since he said that it will pass, it means it was just postponed, not changed. So it means the world will establish that lesser peace before the most great peace come. Because this lesser peace actually prepare way for the most great peace. Most great means a spiritual peace. It means not only we do not make war and reduction of armaments, but all the peoples feel they are the members of one family, that is human family, and cooperating with each other, and there is no hatred, no negative, no enmity against each other.
This has been a very inspiring discussion. Thank you very much for coming back and speaking with us about this very prescient and very beautiful worldview of Baha'u'llah. We're just about done for today. May I ask you to close with a quote from Baha'u'llah?
Yes, I just want a very short paragraph, one of his writing. He said, "O people of justice, be as brilliant as the light and as splendid as the fire that blazes in the burning bush. The brightness of the fire of your love will no doubt fuse and unify the contending peoples and kindreds of the earth, whilst the fierceness of the flame of enmity and hatred cannot but result in strife and ruin. We beseech God that he may shield his creatures from the evil designs of his enemies. He verily hath power over all things."
Trickles down. time inverted along a fault line below the surface. There is a sequence, there is a reason for all these nightmares, for all this mayhem.
Thank you.